Hello, you're tuned to Truth News Radio Australia. It's Wednesday, the 9th of September, 2009, and I'm Harewood Fenton, and you are tuned to a pretty unusual kind of podcast experience where we probe into all kinds of odd things, things that haven't sometimes seen the light of day, or sometimes they've only ever seen a kind of eerie light of misrepresentation and spin from the mainstream news. So welcome, and I hope you find the experience enjoyable if it's your first time. If you're a regular listener, welcome back. I have tonight another original. In about half an hour, I'll be bringing on a guest who is going to be talking about fluoride. This is our first kind of dipping our toe into the fluoridation question. We're getting a guy on the show who's actually got a website up. He's an Australian who's started a website and an organisation called Fluoride Australia. So we'll be hearing about that. And in the meantime, before we get into that topic, I have a number of stories that have built up over the past week that I want to cover. So without further ado, I think we'll get into the first section of the show, and sit back, fasten your seatbelts, and I hope you enjoy the ride. Okay, well, over the last week, a number of stories have piled up, as they always do. And the first one that I want to actually broach is actually an article that was written by Paul Watson of Prison Planet, because I think it was quite an interesting article, and he wrote it in response to an attack, well, in the form of in the guise of a, you know, scholarly article in a magazine called Psychology Today, which proposed that people who believe in, you know, quote, conspiracy theories, unquote, are mentally disturbed. It used just a lot of classic ad hominem style attacks, and the basic theme is one that it's nothing new. We've seen it over and over again. You know, the claim is made that people who you know purport people who tout alternative theories are mentally disturbed, because why? Because, you know, they have some aberration in their mind. They have some, you know, a need to have an unconventional view, which you know stems from some sort of diseased condition of the mind. Now, what Paul Watson has done with his critique is he's kind of turned the spotlight back on the psychologists, which I think is quite clever. I'll just quote from the beginning of the article here. According to a Psychology Today hit piece written by psychologist John Gartner, people prone to thinking that powerful men might actually get together and plan to maintain and advance their power are borderline psychotics who are a danger to society. In reality, hundreds of years of history has taught us that psychologists routinely aid authoritarian regimes in enforcing tyrannical and inhumane policies, while helping them crush political opposition by defining suspicion of authorities as mental illness. And he goes on to highlight examples of this. Psychologists in the Soviet Union would stifle free speech by classifying skepticism and political opposition as mental illness. And mental hospitals were used in the Soviet Union as prisons in order to isolate political prisoners, discredit their ideas, and break them physically and mentally. And there is, of course, a story closer to home, which I think I covered on a previous show, but I'll just run through that one again. There was a woman from New Zealand who was locked up for several weeks because she claimed that 9/11 was an inside job, and the psychiatrist, the consulting psychiatrist, decided that that was a delusion and that he wouldn't let her out because she was adhering to a delusional belief. So, you know, Soviet Union in the 1930s sounds like a very far-off, unrealistic comparison. Well, you know, there's one example of it happening very recently within the last 3 years in New Zealand, okay? It may be happening now. You know, we probably need to investigate because people can get committed to hospitals, and the process by which that occurs is generally hidden from the public. And, you know, what I know from my general experience is that many, many people out in the community are aware that we're being massively lied to by the authorities. And many people are aware about 9/11. And many of the people who are aware are also people who might tend to be someone on the fringe of society, maybe people who are subject to problems, you know, because these things often come together. So a person who might have some mental or emotional problems might also be aware of the massive lies and massive distortion. And this can even feed a psychosis. I mean, you know, people tend to think, oh, well, you know, paranoia, it just springs from, you know, an endogenous origin. That's sort of one of the actual ideas that's put forward by psychiatry. But people can become paranoid as a result of their environment as well. And when you feel that you've been massively lied to and massively betrayed, that can lead to paranoia. And in a sense, the paranoia is actually justified, but it can also become a form of mental illness, even if some of the concepts in there are correct. So, you know, there's not really a clear dividing line between what would be, you know, healthy and mentally ill. See, that's a very oversimplified kind of fascistic kind of way of looking at the world, is to think of everything in black and white. You know, I mean, that's, you know, exactly the way the Nazis operated in terms of classifying entire groups of people by their racial history. You know, you're either an Aryan or a Jew, you know, or a Slav. And of course, in those days as well, with the eugenics theories being very popular, people were classified as being either sort of mentally or, you know, congenitally sort of less value to society than, you know, certain groups were seen as being basically flawed, you know, certain that they thought that, you know, there were qualities that were actually biological that made one type of person more valuable than another. And that is why in those times, right up to the Second World War, it was very common practice to sterilize people in mental hospitals, because the belief, and it was held by very, you know, high-minded philanthropists, you know, caring people, believed that we had to improve the gene pool, you know, and we had to prevent these kind of flawed genetic examples. We had to prevent them from reproducing. So, you know, psychology and psychiatry were a major force in eugenics and in the systematic exterminations that occurred in Nazi Germany, and have been used since in political contexts as well. I know that in Eastern Europe there was a lot of persecution during the period of the Serbian conflicts, and I don't have the details there, but I know that a lot of psychiatrists were in charge of some of the most outrageous offences, you know, crimes against humanity that were committed in the former Yugoslavia. So, this article I just recommend to you, and it is as I said, in response to a massive hit piece that was published in Psychology Today. And, you know, we'll put that up on the show notes, and, you know, you can have a look and see what you think. Okie doke. Now, getting on with the rest of tonight, let me just move to a very interesting story, one which I think really goes to the heart of where emissions trading is really, emissions trading scheme, carbon trading is really headed. A story came out late last week that an Australian firm was involved in a $100 million carbon trading scandal. An Australian company has been swept up. This is, I'm reading here from the Sydney Morning Herald. It was September 4, 2009. An Australian company has been swept up in a $100 million carbon trading scandal in Papua New Guinea after claims that fake carbon certificates were given to landowners to help persuade them to sign over the rights to their forests. The scandal threatens to undermine efforts by the climate change minister Penny Wong to win support at the United Nations climate talks in Copenhagen for a global carbon trading scheme to include forests in the likes of PNG and Indonesia. Now, well, and so it should. Now, this story has had further developments today. It was also in the papers today, and I don't have the story in front of me, but it turns out that the company is very closely connected to the government. Okay, so this company that is trading fake carbon certificates has the support of the government. Okay, it's not a good situation. It's criminal behaviour, and it's what we've always anticipated as occurring with an emissions trading scheme, because it's such an incredible sort of bureaucratic kind of game, really. It's kind of just a massive amount of bureaucratic red tape and, you know, things that can never be quantified being exchanged. I mean, you know, what is a carbon credit? Well, it's like a papal indulgence, isn't it? It's like a license to do badness. I mean, it's... And just putting aside the science of climate change and all the questions that we've talked about so much on here, even if you believed all that, you'd have to be retarded, surely, to think that a bureaucratic system based on trading these carbon credits would not end up becoming a giant scam. I just can't believe that people would be so naive not to see that. But what I think actually happens is that the general populace isn't really thinking about it, because they haven't been forced to. They've only ever been given these hysterical, you know, this fear-mongering from the likes of Al Gore and the IPCC reports and the constant barrage of propaganda from the BBC and the ABC and all the major news networks. And, you know, when they conduct polls, of course, because the poor, hapless, you know, population has been subjected to this massive propaganda, I mean, they're not going to go against that, you know, and they're going to support what they think is something based on, you know, a crisis. And the question will be, you know, like the house is burning down, you know, should we douse water on the house because it's burning down? I mean, who would say no to that, you know? You'd have to be insane to not say yes. But what's really going on is what they're saying yes to is some massively complex system of bureaucratic, you know, little slips of paper or, you know, imaginary constructs called carbon credits, which are traded, you know, on the stock exchange. I mean, it's nothing, it's not about, you know, spraying water on the fire to put the fire out. It's a trading mechanism, which, according to some incredibly obtuse and, you know, turgid economic theory, is going to lead to less production of CO2. But the people who've put all that together, they're not even scientists, they're just bankers. Okay? It's not. So, you know, we get sidetracked with all these arguments about the sun driving global warming versus the CO2, and, you know, they sort of say, oh, well, you're not an expert, and, you know, the experts say this, and then we say, well, we've got experts too, and then we argue about that till the cows come home. Meanwhile, the real game, the real action is happening at the level of bureaucrats and bankers, okay, who want to put in their sick, twisted little trading scam so that they can consolidate more power and rip you off. That's what's going on, okay. And I think it's about time, you know, those of us who call ourselves, you know, man-made climate change skeptics started to understand that the real game here is with the bankers. The real game is with people who are hijacking science, hijacking the economic system, hijacking our taxation system, to rob us, okay? That's it. Once we understand that, I don't think we'll waste time anymore with the silly debates about the sun versus the CO2 and the water vapor in the air. See, that's a distractor. You'll get bogged down in that. You get bogged down in that for years, and who really knows, eh? I mean, how can we really be sure of anything? Maybe they're right, maybe they're wrong. The point is, whatever the case is, what the bankers are doing is about robbing you. Okay, so let's focus on that, and we're just gonna, you know, I'm gonna keep ramming that message through week after week, and I'm gonna do it stubbornly and relentlessly, just like the BBC does with their programming and their propaganda. I'm going to propagandize this understanding that I've got, and that those who kind of are part of this movement that we're in, most of us have, that it's a trick, that it's a scam, and we're going to confront them. We're going to get out there. We're going to be involved in public events. We're going to do guerrilla journalism. We're going to do it all. So stand by for more news on that topic. Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free. Okay, moving right along. few more points to cover here before we get into our interview for tonight. Still on the CO2 issue. Here again is another story that really highlights the level of control, the level of change in your society that the hardcore, hardline climate change proponents are advocating. And title of the story here, "We must establish a CO2 budget for every person on the planet," says Germany's climate protection advisor. Yes, in a Spiegel online interview, Hans-Joachim Schnellhuber, the German government's climate protection advisor, argues that drastic measures must be taken in order to prevent a catastrophe. He is proposing the creation of a CO2 budget for every person on the planet, regardless of whether they live in Berlin or Beijing. And just highlights from this interview. Humankind has to limit itself to emit only a fixed amount of carbon into the atmosphere until 2050. The German Advisory Council on Global Change has conducted an audit to determine which countries should be allowed to admit how much carbon dioxide in order to remain within the 2-degree limit. Yes, an extraordinary story that once again highlights that this is about total control. This is about moving towards a form of global governance. A lovely little euphemism they like to use, governance instead of government. But anyway, it's a form of total control, and that will basically restrict your entire existence. That's what they want. I'm not saying they're going to achieve it, but that is what they want. So, again, we'll put show notes up for that story. Now, a couple more things about vaccines here that I need to bring to your attention. We've got a story here from Australia. Letter on coercive vaccination campaigns was sent to the ABC by a member of a group called the Australian Vaccination Network. And the author of the letter is Judy Wileyman, who is a PhD student at Murdoch University in Western Australia. And I've actually been in touch with Judy Wileyman, and she is going to hopefully be on this show in a couple of weeks' time. She's done research. She's a PhD student. She's got a master's degree and a bachelor's degree in science. And she's done some really excellent work, and it's solid. It's got scientific research behind it. She's put together some really good documentation to go with it. She's done a brochure and a poster, and this is what we need. Okay, this is the equivalent of having, you know, architects and engineers questioning 9/11. We need people with the scientific qualifications to do the research and get it peer reviewed and challenge at that scientific level. So I hope to bring you more information on that. I'll just read you briefly from the letter that she sent. And it was sent to the ABC. Dear Sir, Madam, I am writing to bring to your attention a human rights issue that many community members are concerned about. The issue is the increasingly coercive nature of the childhood immunization schedule and the recent implementation of mandatory immunization for health professionals and students intending to work in clinical situations. The childhood immunization schedule has been linked to welfare benefits, school entry, and doctor's pay. This means that parents who choose not to vaccinate their children are required to fill out a conscientious objectors form, which many parents are not even informed about. In other words, parents are not being openly informed that vaccination in Australia is not compulsory and that they have a right to choose this procedure. So that is just a taste there of this really important development, and I'm going to be bringing you more details on that week by week. I think it's quite an interesting one. Okay, look, we're going to take a short break now, and we are going to come back with our main story for tonight. So just stand by. This is Katie Melua singing a song which doesn't really need an introduction.
How many roads must a man walk down before you can call him a man? Yes, and how many seas must a white dove say before she sleeps in the sand? Yes, and how many times must the cannonballs fly before they are forever banned? The answer, my friend, is blowing, is blowing. The answer is blowing in the wind. Yes, and how many times must a man look up before he can see the sky? Yes, and how many years must one man have before he can hear the people cry? Yes, and how
sick of the propaganda, when you're over the disinformation, when you can't stand the deception, when the deceit gets too much, when the spin becomes transparent, you know where to turn. You turn on truthnews.com.au with your hosts, Harold Fenton and Joshua Jackson.
Okay, on with the show, and it is my great pleasure for the second half of the show tonight to bring you a totally new story for us. As I mentioned earlier, the fluoride question is one which a massive amount of people are concerned about.
all over the world, really, but particularly in countries that have, you know, mandatory, you know, fluoride in the water, which we, you know, obviously we have no choice over. And many people who've looked into this think it's wrong, and it's based on a lot of research. And I actually came to this fairly late myself. I wasn't really aware of the fluoride issues until about a year and a half ago. It's just one of those things, because it's not, you won't find it in the general news. And unless you start searching, you'll think, why should I care? You know, it must be natural. It must be okay. It must be good for you. I don't think it is. I'd just like to welcome at this point our guest for tonight, Jed Johnson. Jed, welcome to the show.
Yep, thank you. Thanks, Harold.
Absolutely.
Probably the first time I've sort of been on a podcast before.
Oh, look, I'm sure you'll enjoy it. It's my first podcast that I've ever done, this one, but we've been going for a bit over a year now. You know, we're getting a growing number of listeners. I usually have Josh, who's another guy that helps me with this, but he's away. I get different guests on every week, and I've got sort of regular people who come on as well. Jed, you've developed a website called Fluoride Australia, and you described yourself as a web developer, a programmer, a software developer. Is that correct?
That's correct. I'd like to think so. I started my own business a few years back now.
Okay.
And just doing corporate websites and that. But obviously in my journey doing my own business, you know, come across, you know, it was a bit in my face, but fluoride.
Indeed.
And from that, yeah, creating the website itself. But yeah, fluoride itself, like when I moved up to Brisbane, I really had the view of, you know, this state is quite backwards because we don't have it here, because I'd grown up with it most of my life down in New South Wales.
Interesting, yeah.
Yeah, so, I guess what was I faced with was, you know, I was watching the TV ads. There's a dentist ad that went on through up here that fluoride is good for you, and that's what, you know, the government broadcasted all the time.
Sure.
Until you look into it, I guess it's quite the opposite, really. And I mean, that's what the debate is about. You know, the minority that know, you know, what fluoride is, and it's more about, I did the website so I could reach more people, so that they were aware. Just make the information available, really.
Absolutely. Can I just ask, is your phone on speaker or anything like that? Because there's a bit of background noise coming through.
That's a portable one. It's probably got a bit of air in it.
But look, it's okay. It's acceptable. It's not too bad. Just having a look at your site. You've got a lot of resources there, which look like they could be really handy. And you've obviously done, you know, a fair bit of research. You're not a scientist, but you're an independent researcher who's kind of got the web skills to put together a good website, which is a bit similar to what I do, because like I'm also a web developer, and like I started off developing a website looking into 9/11. That was how I kind of got into doing alternative media. And that's 911oz.com. And well, you know, just because no one else was doing it, really. I mean, you know, you often find, I think a lot of people are getting into alternative media because they have to, because no one else is doing it.
Yeah, I can see how, like, people that are, you know, that have good knowledge about fluoride and that are, you know, the specialists, and maybe they're faced with the other side of it as well, is that, you know, they have to pay for a website and it has to be maintained all the time. You know, there's probably, you know, a bit of cost there as well. So,
indeed.
I mean, people like yourself and I.
It's
probably just put it together in our own time because that's what we're good at.
Yeah. You can make it. It doesn't have to be an arm's length cost if you've got some of those skills. Which makes it you know, it's a powerful medium, isn't it? I mean, once you start to really use websites and blogs and podcasts and all these things in the way, you realize the incredible power. I mean, I've just noticed, you know, I mean, we're still pretty small with what we're doing here, but the people who do listen are really keen, and I think they're spreading it. And
I'm quite amazed, really. The response from the website itself, doing websites for other clients and watching them, you know.
Hello? Hello? Looks like we may have lost Jed there. I'm just going to pause that so we can figure out what happened. Okay, we just had a little glitch there. Jed, are you back?
I'm back.
Great, great. Awesome. Yeah, where were we? So you were just describing, you know, what it's like to do this and the response you're getting. So you're saying you got like a pretty healthy response.
Yeah, it's pretty overwhelming.
That's excellent. How long have you had the sign up?
Probably 3 weeks. I haven't really advertised it. I mean, I went to your forum and you know, posted some news there and shared some information. And then, but I haven't really been out anywhere because I, hadn't finalised some changes. But, I'm yet to actually go out there and, you know, put the website out there yet. And that's why I'm, a bit overwhelmed on the response.
Okay, so...
And I think that's due, a lot of it's due to maybe word of mouth, really.
Okay, yeah, and also the fact that people are really desperate for information on this type of topic. And when they see something that's local, you know, when they see something within Australia, they're really keen because there's no other sources of information. So it's incredibly important. Now you've got, I'll just read out the URL here. It's www.fluoridestralia.org.
Yeah.
And you've got a few sections on here, media releases, published facts. You can submit an article. That's a good option. About this site.
Yeah, the website's really divided into two parts.
Okay.
And I publish the media releases, so anything in the mainstream media really that gets published.
Okay.
I put it just on an article. And the other section to the site is, published facts. People can go there for source resources of information.
Okay.
The website's open for people to, leave comments.
A concise summary.
When people go to the mainstream media and they go to put a comment on the website, they get filtered and people can't really get their word across, and you know what I mean?
Yes. It's
so
tricky.
I left it really open for the public to comment, anyone for or against the website and their views.
Excellent. Can you just like summarize what you've learned in your research about fluoride just for the listeners who maybe know very little about it, in the most concise manner, in 5 minutes, what can you say that will make people understand and realize the importance of this? I'll leave it up to you.
I think the questions that you don't ask. It's basically a chemical that's put in the water to benefit our teeth. And, to me, that illustrates that it's a medicine or a vitamin, et cetera. And there's no... I actually worked in pharmacy for 6 years doing IT, so...
Okay.
I'm a bit in disbelief that, posing a question that it's a medicine or whatever you want to call it, it's for the benefit of our health. Why hasn't it gone through the pharmacy system? And why is it put into the water? And then you find out whether, fair enough, if it might be good for your teeth, but you further your research and you'll probably find that it is actually a poison as such.
Mm.
And it isn't a natural source. It's not a pharmaceutical grade fluoride. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to work this, to bring these questions up.
Right.
It's taken from factories. The fertilizer industry, we get ours, from what I know, we get ours from China in a powder, and it's mixed and then leaked into the water supply itself.
So it's imported. It's actually imported, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. A friend of mine has posted for Freedom of Information to the Queensland government as to where we actually source our fluoride from. and that information wasn't provided. So a subpoena is put to the court as well, you know, to find out, and, you know, that's pending.
Okay.
So that sort of information, I believe, you know, it should be transparent. You know, you should know what is going into the water supply.
Yes. You should know exactly what its chemical composition is, where it's sourced. All that should be totally transparent.
Yeah, as much as we know, it's fluoracetic acid. It's got a few names for it, but yeah, it's the most common one used. Fluoride as such.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And the claim that it is good for your teeth, I mean, what's your take on that?
Well, the research is hard to find, you know, for the fall. I pretty much just ignore, I mean, not ignore it, but that's not the source of the problem. Like, you could debate all day if it's good or bad for your teeth. But what about, my concern is, what about the rest of your body? If it's good for your teeth, is it good for your bones? You know, Australia doesn't have any studies on anything outside of the teeth.
And that's an excellent point, yeah.
Yeah. And there hasn't been enough study at all. So, I mean, just to question yourself, like, why would you put medicine? If you put this drug or, you know, chemical through the pharmaceutical industry, you know, it'll take years to pass. And I doubt it would pass at all because it is a poison. It's literally right. A poison. So
yeah, okay. So, you know, even at, I guess, minute quantities, it's still a poison, yeah.
Yeah.
Although people could argue that, I guess, you know, nicotine's a poison. Well, I mean, you know, smoking is not obviously good for you, so that's okay.
Yep.
You could argue caffeine's a poison.
Yeah.
Well, caffeine is a poison, but, you know, having a cup of coffee isn't going to hurt
cigarettes
you.
Cigarettes are a choice as well. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Cigarettes are a choice. You know, alcohol's a poison as well. I mean, pure alcohol will certainly kill you if you drink more than, say, a glassful of it, you know.
Yep.
So, you know, that, I guess the question of it being, I mean, many medicines, of course, are poisonous, in their own right.
Yeah.
Now, but the question, it's a tricky one there. But I mean, from my point of view, any medicine is something I should be able to take at my own discretion. It shouldn't be at the government's discretion. And that's where everyone seems to miss the point when you know, and I've had a few, you know, debates with this with people who just say, well, you know, get over it. You know, it's good for you. So why are you complaining, you know?
Yeah, you're right, definitely. I think, it comes back to choice, really. When you put it in the water supply, you can't control how much you actually drink. So you're an athlete or... You know, you're someone who consumes a lot more water, or you may have a sensitive kidneys that, you know, that you need pure water. You know, people don't have a choice to get around that.
Indeed, and I mean, that problem was illustrated quite graphically in your own city, in Brisbane, wasn't it? You're from Brisbane, right?
Yeah.
Well, did this not happen just earlier this year, that they made a mistake and put way too much fluoride in one of the water, whatever you call them, water catchment areas, yeah.
Yep. And that was about the time I actually, you know, it raised a few questions to me, and that was before I built the, you know, started even building the website. And
okay.
It's probably for a lot of, it was a bit of a wake-up call for a few people, especially ones that were affected.
Yeah. Has there been any fallout from that? Do you know anything more? Because it was in the news, but I haven't heard a single thing about it since then.
Yeah, not... I can't really extend on.
Yeah. Yeah.
The articles. There's a couple of articles on the website itself.
Yes.
Available for resources, but no, nothing. The government aren't. What was actually said was the government isn't liable. You know, who's to blame? They'll just get their wrists slapped, really.
Indeed.
But I think what it's done is created a mistrust in the community, especially when this is a new, you know. A new thing for Brisbane, because we've only had it, since December.
Well, yeah, it seemed almost sinister the way that happened. Fluoridation was introduced by Anna Bligh in Queensland in December of last year. Is that correct?
Don't know the date exactly. It could be February itself.
Okay.
This is the time frames of the rollout. That's all I really know. So I actually wasn't aware at the time it was, but yeah, either. Turn of the year.
And this over medication obviously was detected. Do you know who blew the whistle on it? Because that would be quite interesting. That could be very telling as to what was really going on. Because if it was discovered internally, well, you'd have to say, well, you know, they're doing their job. If it was discovered externally, that's more of a worry. You know what I mean? Because how do we know at any point whether there might be more than what's supposed to be in there? Because we don't. You can't really tell, can you?
Yeah, without monitoring your water supply every time you drink it, I mean, you really put a lot of trust into the government when they bleed it in.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly right. And fluoride itself, I think, not sure. I think you can get, equipment that can test your own supply, but not everyone can do that.
No, it's not.
If you're a keen whistleblower, get one.
I would recommend that. I recommend that to anyone listening to this show, if you've got the ability to do that, and send the information to us, because I'd really like to know more about what is in our water. It's quite important, because we've got to realize that we can't just sit back and hope that people are going to do the right thing, the people in government or whatever are going to do the right thing. We have to do the right thing. We've got to make the change.
Yeah, it was clear to me, not only with that leak in Brisbane that sort of, alerted me to it, but when you go into the research itself, you find out these questions that you don't even ask, like, is it a medicine? Is it bad for other parts of your body? The story that's told through the media, the government, the newspapers, is very pro-fluoride, and you don't actually get to see the other side of the story. So in a way, it's really hard to trust the government again if they're only four. They don't show two sides of the story.
Absolutely. Now, you've got a story on your site about Tasmania, which is another good example of why it doesn't seem to work. Apparently, Tasmania has had fluoridation for 40 years, is it? For almost 50 years?
Yeah.
And they've still got really bad teeth.
Yeah, I think Tasmania was the first guinea pig for Australia. They actually reached up to, over 90% of the population was fluoridated. It's back down to less. But they've had it for over 45 years, and I read this article. I mean, how much proof do you need after 40 years of fluoridation? I guess the main point is Tasmanian government are now, calling for people to get, rush to the dentist, and they're actually funding dental care in addition to the fluoride because their teeth aren't healthier as such.
Okay, yes, it says here that, just from this article, 11.2% of Tasmanians aged 25 to 44 wear dentures, double the national average. A tooth is extracted every 3 minutes in public dental services. Tasmania has the highest percentage of people wearing a denture in the nation. Now, of course, what the fluoride advocates will say was, well, it was worse before. Can we compare, how it is now to say how it was in the 1950s. Has anyone done that research? Because that would be...
Yeah, that's a good point. The article itself, to me it shows, even though it... if people have had fluoridated water for that and the government's still funding, such a large amount of money for people to rush to the dentist. It's probably just a good read for people just to get their own perspective on that.
It's good, yeah. Look, I totally agree. And, I mean, it puts to bed the idea that people have that, fluoride has just done this wonderful thing that, has made our teeth all better, because that is widely believed. I've spoken to a lot of people who think that.
Yeah.
It just seems to be, but I don't know where that belief came from. It's just people believe it. it's like they post-rationalize. I think people do a lot of post-rationalization with these things because they want to believe that the things that have been done were valuable. So they say to themselves, well, everyone's got better teeth now than they used to. I mean, I think in some ways diet has probably improved in all, over the last, say, 50 years in parts of society, although in other places it's got worse. And I'm sure that you'll find that dental health is better in some groups and worse in other groups. I'm sure among very poor, socioeconomically deprived people that you're going to find the same issues that you've always had. And the same goes for diseases, by the way, because it's very similar to the research that's shown that vaccination hasn't worked, because in communities that have that are socioeconomically deprived, diseases like whooping cough are still quite prevalent.
Yeah.
And even though they've been vaccinated, so see, it's the same problem again. That the mass medication that's being delivered doesn't really seem to address the problem. The problems seem to have their own causes that are independent, and yet the medication has problems. You know, the medication brings its own problem.
I mean, you could get the statistics from anywhere, like you said, and whether you're for or against, say, you're pro-fluoride, I mean, you could aim a biased view on statistics that are correct in one area, just for your viewpoint, and if you're against fluoride, I'm sure you could do the same thing.
Absolutely, absolutely.
But, I guess one thing that that Tasmania article, maybe it puts a confidence in people down in Tasmania. This is also a pro fluoride comment as such, that maybe people have such a high confidence and have neglected their dentists, because they've got so much confidence in the water, and
right,
it's not going to do everything as such. I know myself when I was in Wagga, I was like, drinking the water was just the best feeling.
Right.
And it had fluoride in it, and I thought it was great. You change your perception quick when you find out where it came from,
Well, I mean, The point you made earlier, which is, incredibly important, is that maybe it's good for your teeth, but is it good for your bones? Is it good for your brain? I mean, if you drink it, it's going to go into your blood, because it's actually going to go through right into your blood, because it's an ion in the water, isn't it? So basically, it goes into your blood.
Yeah.
And then it can go through the blood-brain barrier. And it can form deposits in the brain, from what I've read.
Heard. Yeah, there's a lot, there's a lot of, ifs and buts out there that aren't researched by the government. I mean, there's independent studies out there by specialists. There's arthritis from the bones. Fluoride itself, it doesn't break down, and from what I've read, it says, 50% of it's stored within the bones. And over time, hip fractures, your bones get brittle, etc. And what you're saying is, the blood, there's kidney, neurological impairments. There's that side of it too. So it's
a lot of unresolved questions there.
Yeah, I mean, just that one question about brings on many questions, and that's, is fluoride a medicine, and why is it on the pharmaceutical patient benefit scheme? Why isn't it over the counter, like an S3 drug, a Schedule 3 drug, where people can just get over the counter, and then they can take as much as they want, without going to the dentist.
Absolutely,
that's the way it should be, and that's the way our systems should work. It shouldn't go in the water supply.
So can I ask, Jed, why do you think fluoride is in the water? Because there's you know, there's a conspiratorial view about this, which you've no doubt come across.
Yeah.
There's either a conspiratorial view, or you say it's just misguided, or perhaps they're trying to dump, you know, toxins. Well, okay. Yeah, but
I think it's profit on people.
Okay.
What's
the profit?
Personal view.
Right.
And that's a safe view.
Okay. Who's making a profit and how are they making a profit?
The factories, the from China. Well, fluoride itself, it goes out the chimney stack of the factories, it's watered down and captured.
Okay.
And diluted down because it's not allowed to go into the ozone because it's dangerous.
Okay.
Back in the 60s, Tasmania itself, cows dying, etc., around the farmland, around the factories, from fluoride. So it's not allowed to go out of the factory, and they have to pay for, the waste. They can't put it in rivers, etc.
Okay.
But they have to actually pay to get rid of it. And ideally, if they could sell it to the public and bleed it to their water supply, they're making a profit.
They turn it into a commodity rather than a waste product that has to be disposed of. Yeah, yeah.
That's one of the other angle. You can do your research further, and there's the dumbing down of the population. It affects the thyroid gland. I mean, this is the information that I read on the thyroid gland from specialists. I'm not saying I'm a professional. Go and do your own research on this, but it makes people like a lazy, demotivated as such.
Well, this is getting back towards the, I guess, conspiratorial view, or you might call it the eugenics argument, that basically that there's a plan here to dumb people down to make them more docile or maybe even kill them off. That a lot of people do believe that. I don't really know where I stand on that. I find it a bit hard to believe. But, I mean, because it's obviously we're all drinking the water. Everyone's drinking it. And most people, rich and poor are all drinking it and we're all bathing in it. So if it is a plan like that, it's incredible. The elite must be an incredibly tiny, group who are sort of separate from that whole thing, who have their own water supply. I mean, maybe that's true. I just until I can get some more concrete evidence for that, I can't really go with that argument. I'm not ruling it out. I just can't quite understand the mechanics of it. It's a bit like the claims that some people make that we're being sprayed from aerial planes, which again it would be affecting everyone. And until we can get some more solid facts on it, I just have to try to stick with what we can prove. And
exactly,
I think we can prove that the fluoride shouldn't be there. We can prove that it hasn't been properly researched, that it is a medicine, and that's enough.
I think for me, what it's done, it does leave a question on the conspiracy side of things.
Yeah,
because there's such a mistrust now in the government and I really think it's a neglect, of looking at further research about what it does for the other parts of the body. If the government can't do that and they just put in the water supply, maybe because they are profiteering, from the factories, etc., if that's an angle, it creates a mistrust for me, and you can only question what's the agenda behind this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Look, we've seen the same thing with genetically modified foods. Exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
We've seen a complete laziness, a sloppiness in looking at the dangers and just a greedy, reckless approach from the corporations that are trying to aggressively market their genetically modified seeds into countries, and governments getting kind of paid off, government bodies being funded. CSIRO gets 40% of their funding from organizations like Monsanto. I mean, and so we see this it's a sluggish, lazy kind of bureaucratic blinkered view of everything that allows these outrageous things to occur. And then of course, because all these things get in place, when individuals try to stand up, we seem like we're marginal, you know. Those who criticize look like we're just marginal, and people say, oh, that's just some marginal little group, you know, just some fringe crazies. Well, it's just that we were the first people to stand up and try to speak about this. We were never given a... It was never explained. But that is a technique that they use to silence dissent everywhere.
A good analogy I use is, you know, the world was once flat and now it's round.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you were ever to say that the world was round, you know, when everyone thought it was flat, the first people that spoke out, you know, condemned. I can imagine back in then days, they probably, you know, shot them.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, the Catholic Church... Well, you know, they basically said that the sun went around the earth, you know, and if you said that it was otherwise, like Galileo did, you could be, you know, you could be excommunicated, which was really like the worst thing, short of being killed, you know.
Don't speak up.
Yeah. So it's the same thing, totally, yeah.
But I think fluoride, will be one of the... I think the government, they're rolling... In Queensland themselves, they're rolling it out until the end of 2012. Right now, they're onto Rocky, etc. I think they're going to steam ahead of it. But I think there's a federal court case coming up that's out there. I'm trying to make more people aware, so we can reach communities as such. So when that comes up. It's more of an educated public that's aware of it, that can support it as well. But I think it will be something of a passage. You probably look back like asbestos or smoking, something like that.
Right.
And you go, oh my God, we used to drink fluoride in the water. That's a poison.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, asbestos was used in everything for decades. There's news stories coming out all the time about asbestos because they were just putting it in. They were putting it in road fill. They were putting it in driveways, apparently. A lot of people's driveways are made out of asbestos fibre.
Yeah.
And you're quite right. You know, that's now fully acknowledged.
That's where fluoride is, I think. It's at the stage where, the world's flat and it's turning into world's round. And I think the more people that are educated that it is round now, like fluoride is a poison. There's another side to the story. It's okay, to speak about it. And I'm quite amazed from the amount of hits on the website. It just goes to show that, people that do get informed, it's not commonly talked about at a social conversation that you... people are out there, and knowledgeable about this.
Well, people are knowledgeable about it, and a lot of people. I think there could be a market in water purifiers in this country. I'm actually thinking about getting one of these ones that get the water out of the air. And I was actually thinking about maybe importing them and selling them because I know that a lot of people would buy them, and I couldn't find any distributor here that I could buy from directly. Have you done any research into that?
Yeah, I have. Actually, a fair bit. I've actually decided. I'm actually a family, in a family of one of ten. So I've started importing a few just from overseas.
Oh, excellent!
A model there, and it's a reverse osmosis system that's the minimum requirement that you need to take the fluoride out of the water.
Sure. Is that the Ecolo Blue or is it different brand? Or?
Yeah, it's not the Ecolo Blue brand, but it doesn't take it out of the air. And I think that's a 7-stage filter of the Ecolo Blues.
Okay, right. So this one takes it. Yeah,
a lot of stuff out there that you can get, and normally you do have to import them or pay a higher price to get them locally.
Sure.
And I do have my heart out there for the people, and there's a lot of people that can't really afford it.
Indeed.
I feel as a small business, and I know there's a lot of profiteering on water filters themselves. I mean. And for me, it's not about that. I'd rather get the stuff out of the water and not have to take this angle of I do want to sell the water filters at a lower price as such.
Yeah.
It's
interesting, isn't it?
The more the merrier. I mean, I think the more competition, the more availability of it out there for filter systems.
Sure. There are these aggressive moves from government to try and stop people from buying bottled water. I guess you heard about, there was a big story, there's a town somewhere in southern New South Wales that's banned the sale of bottled water.
I wasn't aware.
Oh yeah, I'll get the article up for that. I just can't remember the name. It's a smallish town. It's kind of a tourist area. They made a big deal about how terrific that was, because they're saving the carbon footprint on the plastic of the bottles, and what a wonderful contribution to the environment banning bottled water was. But the extraordinary thing about that story is that they're not banning Coca-Cola. They're not banning any soft drinks.
Wow.
They're just banning the one thing you can buy in a shop that's kind of harmless, and good for you. They're banning that.
Yeah. Extraordinary, isn't it? That's the last real resource people have. I mean, if your water is fluoridated.
It is,
definitely,
yeah.
I'm sure they sell more Coke than water.
Absolutely, yeah.
I can guarantee you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's... that is just weird. And again, there just seems to be, some of the programming here in brainwashing combines themes about the environment, global warming, CO2, the issue of water, as you can see, we should just drink water out of the tap because then we're not putting a strain on the environment by drinking out of a plastic bottle. I mean, ridiculous, twisted arguments like that seem to be more and more common. And part of
this is really where the government should step in. You know, from capitalism, where, dog eats dog world, businesses will do anything to profit, and this is where the government, I really feel that they should step in, for things that are morally right for the people. That isn't happening at all.
Absolutely, yeah. And of course they're going to have to be pressured to do that. I mean, I don't think we have anyone in government who's doing that for us. I don't think the Greens really have any policy on fluoride, do they?
Yeah, it's left me. I am really fresh on politics.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
It's going to be a fast learning curve for me. And for a lot of people out there, I myself have, just sort of come into this from the, it'd only be 3-4 months, really.
Okay.
If it's an encouragement for other people, it's all too much. Let the big boys do it. It's definitely not. I'm a firm believer in the minority, the little people.
Yeah, we need more and more. We need anyone who wants to should start a blog or a simple site. And as you said, you'll get a response. You just got to put that effort into it. And it's not that hard.
Yep. And for me, there's nothing else in it other than for that. The pure thing that you're delivering the information. Whether people want what they want to do with it, that's fine. But it's that choice after that. But it's you're doing that part, like your website.
Absolutely.
911 Oz.
Yeah, yeah.
Just reaching people. And your site, it is a forum, but it's available. You must know yourself that you get, the amount of people that are actually logged in repeatedly, commenting on the website. You get so much more people that would just get interest.
Yeah, we have a lot of people lurking, a lot of people browsing. It's constant, and it was from the moment I launched it. I launched that site in, I think it was about January 2006.
Okay.
And it, as soon as it was on Google, it was just getting traffic. It was amazing. And in fact, because there really wasn't anything else from Australia, it came up at the top of 9/11 searches from the beginning because there was no competition at all. And I think your site's similar. There's probably not much else out there. So
there's so much over in the US. And personally, I went there because what's going on in Australia? I know it's happening overseas. Genetically modified seeds, etc. Everything happening over there. What's happening in Australia? And so it looks like. I mean, it's a great tool just to go to your site as well, just to learn more. I think it was ABC. I didn't even know ABC was for the public as such.
They
were part of the mainstream.
Yeah.
Which are really some things are a bit obvious that they are.
Yes.
Like. That they publish mainstream, but I didn't know the taxpayer contributed to ABC. Is that correct?
So you mean ABC here in Australia?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's a government owned corporation. It used to be called the Australian Broadcasting Commission. It's now called the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, but it is a government owned corporation, very similar to the BBC, I guess.
Okay.
So your background, Jed, is from like.
I was born in Canberra, and then I grew up in Wagga Wagga.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Country New South Wales.
Yeah.
Above Albury. Yeah, big family, worked on the farm.
Okay.
Played footy.
Yeah.
Drank a lot of beer.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, well, that's good. That's a good sort of profile. See, it's not like... I mean, most people who end up speaking out are people who've... they're not fringe people. This is what there's a false stereotype that's always put out, and they say that people who are part of dissenting groups are fringe types. They're not. The people that are the most active are always seem to be people who've got like pretty solid backgrounds in whatever they've done.
I'll take that as a compliment then.
Yeah.
No, you're right. There is a stereotype conspiracy. Mad Hatter.
Yeah.
Sort of people out there that I
mean, those people do exist too. And, some of them can be a bit crazy, but they don't tend to do much. Those sort of people tend to be, they're around, but they're not the ones that make things happen.
They're the front line, but I'll tell you, on most things, but I'll give them, bold credit for that.
Yeah, look, absolutely. I mean, look, the problem is... there's a lot of... I was actually saying this earlier before you came on. I was talking about the problems with... there was an article that was written in Psychology Today, a prominent psychology magazine, saying that people who believe in conspiracy theories suffer from mental illness, and that they were basically making an equivalence there between, that type of belief system as being a form of mental illness. And, it's a common tactic. It's a common way of just attacking.
Yeah.
The problem here is that a lot of people do have mental problems, and a lot of people who are involved in, or just associate themselves with groups do have mental problems. But quite often people become disturbed as a result of finding information that is disturbing, and that can lead to an exacerbated sense of, disturbance. So it's not a clear-cut thing. It's not like, there's normal people and abnormal people. And anyone can become disturbed when they find out, for example, that where our water's being poisoned.
And
you'd be like quite right to be disturbed.
You're back a dog into the corner and you get the same thing.
Yeah. There's no shame in that at all. Just really have to... we've just got to be strong. We've got to be strong about making a change and not like the problem is a lot of people fall back into a powerless kind of state and they don't do anything, that they obsess over these things, but they don't ever do anything. What you're doing is hopefully going to help people get it out there, start making it more outward focused.
And I had a great feeling about that too. I offer my services, to other people too. Because I know that, people that feel like they can't do anything or give themselves, I'll do what I can. Obviously, I've nearly run myself into the ground from a business. I'm not doing enough corporate work. I'm doing more you know, free work. But obviously, sure, you have to, you know, cover costs. But, you know, if people, you know, need a basic web page or something like that, I'm, you know, I'll help them out with it, you know, next to nothing. So
excellent, excellent.
I think that's, you know, part of my contribution as well.
That's a great, that's a really valuable contribution.
Yeah.
Look, just we're probably getting towards the end of the show, but I just wanted to, I think we need also, really important, is we need to get dentists on board with this.
Wow.
Have you had any, because I tell you, my own dentist is superb. I mean, she's a holistic dentist, right? And she's got all the best equipment, really excellent professional. They do everything perfectly right. But she does not believe in fluoride. And she, they don't even use it. They don't even paint it on the teeth. They use something else because they don't think that actually even topical fluoride, they don't think is as good as some of the other stuff you can get, which I don't know what it is. But I was asking about it last time I was there. And they also filter it out of their water in the practice at the dentist. They filter it out of their water. It's called the Holistic Dental Clinic. I'll tell you what, I'll put it up on this show notes so everyone can get it. It's in St. Leonard's in Sydney. Yeah, it'll be on the Truth News site. They're an excellent dentist. And I've been thinking about, I'd like to talk to them, and you know, you're welcome to contact them as well, because we need to get dentists on board with this.
Yeah, that's another thing I really haven't touched on, but I'm quite amazed at dentists actually supporting this, because in theory, if they put it in the water, I mean, they're taking away their business if you know, it's good for your teeth.
Right, it? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, from one point of view, even from a cynical point of view, yeah.
Yeah, I don't really understand it. It was quite funny how here I am building this website, you know, about awareness and fluoride and the facts, and then on the other side, I'm building two dentist websites that are incorporating, you know, pro fluoride, you know.
Oh, that's interesting. So you were, right?
Yeah, I was quite dazzled. I won't mention who the one of the dentists were, but he's on, you know, one on the dental board itself, and he's rather high up. So,
okay,
I'd love to get some traffic in that and present the website to him and just discuss with him really over a beer or two and see what comes of it. But definitely, we need a few dentists out there.
Yeah, I mean, we need to have dentists. There just needs to be some kind of organization of dentists against fluoride or fluoridation of the water, you know. I mean, fair enough if dentists want to use it as part of their practice, you know, that seems okay.
Yeah.
Dentists who oppose the mandatory, you know, involuntary medication, you know, we need that.
Look, I'm sure that we can touch base. There's people that have been on this for a lot longer than, you know, I have, that I really need to communicate with, and I'm sure that they do have a good network of professionals out there that are willing to stand up as well. And I think it's probably good for the people as well to, you know, if we do have dentists on side, that it does give them more professional.
It helps when you've got people who've got the qualifications.
Yeah, I like myself. I'm just a web developer.
Yeah, well, that's right. And I'm an independent media person. But I'm kind of bringing together a lot of different cross disciplinary kind of ideas.
Yeah, I think
so. You know,
doing a great job on that.
Thanks. Yeah, but you know, it does make a big difference if someone who's, you know, spent 5 or 6 years studying and has a degree in that area comes on board. Although it doesn't totally change things either. When we've got a lot of doctors are against vaccination, but they have no voice. Mm-hmm. And as we've seen with other subjects that we cover on the show, we've got 800 architects and engineers who have signed a petition that the World Trade Center was, you know, needs to be investigated because it was looks like it was demolished, and but they are totally ignored. So even that doesn't radically change anything. It does help, but we're still just the amount of when you have a giant corporate government kind of blockade, it's really hard.
Yeah. Going on to that, I saw Charlie Sheen was out there today, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah, Charlie Sheen, he's...
That's fresh news.
He first stepped out in 2006, and he's been quiet, but now he's come back on with this letter to Obama. I hope that produces some results. We'll see. You know?
Just on the conversation where, you know, professionals themselves, you know, don't have an overall effect, that you get a front runner like Charlie Sheen, I guess what it does is it exposes it to the public and going, you know, well, they might want to call him a Mad Hatter or whatever, but, you know, it questions that, you know, people might actually read, you know, the information out there.
I would hope so. I have some doubts about whether this one's going to work. But, you know, good on him for doing it. And I think he's got the right attitude.
For poor old Charlie, I think it, a few years back, when you said 2006?
Right.
Yeah, like maybe the last few years he's probably waiting for another investigation to start, and he's pulled the pin. He says, obviously, nothing's going to happen.
Yeah.
Time to hit Obama up for it, I think.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, then we need more entertainers and people just standing up for truth and justice. It's not good enough. I mean, we've got some amazing actors, some Australian actors who, Russell Crowe. I mean, I just don't know why some of these people don't talk about, because I know Russell Crowe is aware of these issues. I mean, he was in an interesting movie that's just come out called State of Play, which appears to be a totally totally based on some very serious things that are really going on to do with the private security firms like Blackwater and what they've been doing, rampaging around the world, you know, assassinating and torturing people. Most of these, many people in Hollywood are very aware of it, but of course, you know, anyone who's survives because of their fame can be destroyed as well. And I just give you as an example, Tom Cruise. I mean, Tom Cruise was obviously always known to be a Scientologist, but the point is when he started criticizing the pharmaceutical companies, the press turned on him overnight.
Yeah, they'll find every bad point they could.
Yeah, I mean, and everyone always knew he was a Scientologist, but no one cared about that. But as soon as he said the pharmaceutical companies were bad, oh, suddenly it was like everyone agreed that suddenly that they changed public opinion really quick. I was amazed, you know. So
maybe that's why a lot of other actors don't come out. I mean, they're in their safe comfy zone, really.
Yeah, yeah, that's totally right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah. Not poor old Tom.
Yeah. well, look, you know, I'm sure he's doing okay. It's been really great talking to you, Jed.
It's great. I think it's great calls. Obviously, the listeners can refer to some articles that you're going to post there underneath this pod.
Yeah, we'll do that. And we'll make sure to keep you updated, and hopefully you might get a few more inquiries as a result of this.
Yeah, reach more people.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess I'll say goodnight at that point, and thanks so much for coming on.
Okay, thanks, Eric.
Yeah, hope to talk to you again soon. Cheers. Thanks.
Cheers, bye.
Well, that's a show for tonight. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. And we'll have all of those issues and articles for you to look at the website. Well, that's it from me. And good night. And good night, world. Good night, universe. Good night, cyberspace.